Chapter 4. Love. Spring began to blossom as Cynegils healed, and Princess firmly believed the two events were related. Every time she visited him, he was stronger, and every time she left Tate's hut, more leaves and flowers had unfolded outside. She saw the year's first daffodil the day he first sat up. The primrose greeted her with their pale yellow petals along the village wall the first time he managed to stand. And the forest shimmered with the light green glow of its youthful canopy when he took his first steps outside. Walking was painful and difficult for Cynegils, and Princess could see the frustration in his eyes. Old Guderian loaned him a cane, but it didn't work. The problem was that his left arm was also injured, so he couldn't use it to support his left leg. The only way for Cynegils to move was to lean on someone who would half carry him to his destination. Cynegils was clearly a man used to independence, and continually relying on help seemed to pain him more than his broken bones. Tate finally fashioned a long, sturdy crutch with a fork at the top. Cynegils struggled until he mastered holding it in place by wedging it under his left armpit and clasping his arm to his side. It didn't work well, but it was enough to get him outside and, most importantly, to the toilet by himself. It had been 3 long weeks, but Cynegils finally had enough mobility to begin to feel more like a person than a patient. Princess spent as much time with him as she could while he was an invalid, but early spring was a busy time of the year for the village. She had her usual chores of tending the goats, helping wash the dishes after meals, and all the other tasks she did throughout the year. But spring was also planting season. Almost everyone in the village was out in the fields hoeing the earth and preparing for planting. Loosening the soil, removing rocks and volunteer weeds, and creating neat, orderly furrows was back-breaking work. But Princess still managed to visit Cynegils every chance she had. He was on her mind even when she wasn't visiting him. She would bore Doretta and Maida with the latest news of his recovery while they washed dishes down at the stream. She would recount the stories he told her so many times that she could recite them better than him. While some people tired of her constant chatter about Cynegils, most found it amusing and entertaining. It had been 7 years since anything new and exciting had come into their valley, and even the older married couples felt the blush of spring romance as she talked. Bede was the only person who didn't seem interested. He kept to his sheep without even casting verbal insults toward her anymore. Bede didn't just ignore Princess. He appeared to withdraw from everyone else as well, but Princess hardly noticed. Cynegils's confinement meant they could do little else than talk during this time, and Princess was eager to hear everything he had to say about the outside world she'd never seen. Cynegils wondered why the village was so isolated, but Princess kept her promise to her father and deflected any questions about their history. She was so excited about hearing Cynegils's stories about the world that he would simply laugh and give in to her demands to tell another tale. Her nervousness around him had dissipated as they grew to know each other, and one bright spring day, Princess complained that Cynegils was much too long of a name. She immediately proclaimed that he would henceforth be called Cyn. Cynegils balked because no one had ever given him a nickname before. No one had dared. Instead of complaining, though, he cleverly suggested that perhaps her name was too long as well. Princess sweetly responded, "No. Princess is perfect, but you alone may shorten it to Prince, if you find it too difficult to say." After a long pause, where he silently stared into her smiling eyes, Cyn chose to change the subject instead. He explained to Princess that he was from a town called Dorchester-on-Thames, which was a week's journey from here by horse. Princess couldn't comprehend anything that distant, but Cyn assured her that the world extended far beyond that. Dorchester was a river town that had been in existence since ancient times. Cyn claimed it was at the northernmost end of the great River Thames, which rambled all the way to the great city of Londinium before flowing into the sea. Cyn said ships could navigate all the way from Dorchester to Londinium on the Thames, and spoke with such authority that Princess suspected his father was a merchant who used the river for trade. Cyn never talked much about his family, and Having secrets of her own, Princess never pressed him for details. It was clear, however, that he came from a family of significant wealth and power. She imagined that a clan could become very wealthy by controlling the flow of raw materials and finished goods across such a vast region. Dorchester sounded almost unimaginable to Princess, and she closed her eyes to try and picture it as Sin spoke. She had always lived in a region which was wild and heavily forested. Sin explained that locals had cleared the forest around Dorchester many years ago for farming, leaving nothing but broad fields and pastures. Princess believed Sin, but try as she could, she just couldn't imagine it. Geography and economics were not the only differences between Sin's world and hers. Sin had extensively traveled, while Princess had spent most of her life within the confines of this valley. The fact that Princess had never even seen the road before last autumn, while Sin had traveled far and wide, was both depressing and inspiring. Every word he spoke stoked her fire of desire to leave home. She knew she could not spend the rest of her life here now that she had touched the outside world. Eventually she asked him about the attack and why he was traveling alone on the road to Wilton. Princess noted that Sin became guarded on the topic, but did provide an explanation, albeit with carefully chosen words. His uncle had brought Sin with him on a business trip to Bath and then to Axbridge. He added that Axbridge was a vital mining community, which Princess knew since her early years were just a stone's throw away. Evidently, trade with Axbridge was being disrupted by the fighting between the Saxons and the Glastoning and Demonia kingdoms. Sin's uncle was there to smooth things out, but negotiations evidently fell apart, and Sin's uncle sent him to Wilton to wait for him in safety. Sin left in a coach with a guard and a driver who was instructed to take him through Cheddar Gorge via the high road to Wilton. It was a lesser-used route through a wild forest, which would typically be avoided, but Glastoning had troops on the more commonly used highway along the base of the ridge. A band of highwaymen ambushed them shortly after they crested the ridge above Cheddar Gorge, and a fight ensued. Sin's guard ordered him to take the coach and ride off. Sin refused at first, but the guard explained that his job was to protect him and insisted that he leave. Sin heeded the man, jumped on the coach, and rode off. He didn't know what happened to his protectors, but given the highwayman caught up with him less than 10 minutes later, he assumed the worst. Sin thought he could stay ahead of the robbers, but the wheels caught in the mud, he went flying off the driver's bench, and the next thing he remembered was waking up in Tate's hut. They were holding hands by the time Sin finished his story, and neither said anything for several long minutes. Princess was in awe that she was sitting next to someone who had traveled the same route as the dragon and ridden right past the castle where she was born. She desperately wanted to ask him about the castle. Was it still there? Why didn't he mention it? Was there any trace of the terrible dragon Kjolwulf? She was lost in these thoughts until she noticed that Sin was gently stroking her knuckles with his thumb. Princess looked up into his eyes and realized at that moment what everyone else already knew. She was in love.